Welcome to Coaching Carrie, the podcast where two lawyers turned life and leadership coaches rewatch Sex and the City and can't help but wonder, how would Carrie, Miranda, Charlotte, and Samantha's lives have been different if they just had a coach to help them along?
Becky, are you pro Carrie's new haircut or anti Carrie's new haircut?
I mean, I sort of have Carrie's new haircut, so that's confusing.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, I was watching this. I was like, oh, Becky just got her haircut.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's take your beautiful hair out of it because I love your new haircut and it looks amazing. So let's set your haircut to the side. Let's think about 2002. Carrie Bradshaw going from her, you know, crazy, what did somebody call it? Botticelli-esque.
Yes.
The gay guy that Charlotte
yes.
dates in season 3.
Yes.
So she cuts all of her curls off. And now, especially in this episode, I feel like it's a little awkward. Like they haven't quite figured out how to style it or something.
Well, I mean, she has really, like, I have stick straight hair, right? So to get my hair to look like hers looks in the beginning of this episode requires much work.
Effort. Yeah.
That said, if I had her curls, there's no way I would have cut them off. Like, she has just such great, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just so good. And I think the short is challenging because the curls get curlier and then they're trying to figure out, like, how to shape it and manage it. And we see that over the next little bit here.
Yeah. And it's interesting because in the first episode, especially, it's almost like they cut all of her highlights out of the back of the head.
Yes.
And they left them in on the sides. And to me, that's very strange.
Yes.
I'm like, why does she have straight up brown hair on the back? And then on the sides, it's still got all these highlights. That to me is the weirdest part. But so apparently at the time, this haircut was like a huge controversy.
Was it?
Yeah, because for that reason, like she was like famous for her big curly hair. It was almost like the Felicity thing. Like you remember when Felicity like cut all of her hair off and it was a complete freaking scandal. And I guess it was similar to that. And Sarah Jessica Parker has since then said that she hated this haircut.
I'm sure it was a pain in the ass.
I mean, it probably was. I mean, but on the flip side, it kind of grows on me as it starts to grow out a little bit. I'm like, oh, this is actually really cute. Like, I like it when it's less spiky and softer.
Yes.
As they style it kind of maybe a little bit lit. More in season 5. Yeah. But it's also like, this is what women do.
It's very real in that way, right? Like, it made perfect sense to me that she chopped her hair. Like, she's just gone through this major transition. She's like really trying to figure out who she is. And in that sense, it made perfect sense. Yeah.
I know. So I'm totally with you. Like, this episode in particular, I'm like, what the hell is going on with her hair? It's so kooky.
Yeah.
Like, it's very spiky. It's got the weird brown blonde thing going on.
Yes.
It's not my favorite. But at the same time, I'm like, I appreciate that they really brought her down to earth. They were like, she would go chop her hair off.
Totally. I think she would. She's trying to figure out. I mean, you know, you left us last episode with this question of like, what do you want your life to look like? I mean, I think she is dealing with that reality, even if she's not articulating that or like actually doing the introspection. Like, that is where she is in the process for sure. Yep.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Well, here we are in season 4, episode 17, A Vogue Idea, and it aired on February 3rd of 2002. And in summary, here's what did you say?
My birthday.
Your birthday. Happy birthday to Carrie with a K. So Carrie with a C is freelancing for Vogue. Samantha is planning Richard's birthday gift, and Miranda is prepping for her baby, and Charlotte talks her into a baby shower, free of the usual trappings, no storks, no crustless sandwiches, no present opening, no cutesy stuff. So let's talk through the Sam and Richard storyline first. Their storyline opens with them dining at a lovely restaurant, talking about how he'd like to celebrate his upcoming birthday. The answer is that he doesn't want to celebrate at all. Until the young blonde hostess swings by to tell them that she took the liberty of pre-ordering the chocolate souffle and that they're the most attractive couple in the place. Richard gets a little twinkle in his eye and says what he'd like for his birthday is actually a three-way. Samantha obliges, though from her diner and baby shower conversation, it's clear that she's not really completely comfortable with this idea of inviting someone else into the bedroom, but is talking herself into it. The night of the event, she tries to lay down some ground rules, attempting to make it clear that the only emotional relationship in the room is hers. There's seemingly some competition between the two of them as this event starts to unfold until the special guest star calls Richard daddy, and that's that.
It's so weird.
And she's kicked out of the love nest, and Richard announces to Samantha that he wants to give monogamy a try.
It's like such a weird moment for them.
It is. It is and it isn't. I mean,
Yeah, you're right.
So now for Miranda and Charlotte. Miranda is stressed about baby prep. She claims she doesn't have time to gather all the baby necessities. Charlotte says the obvious solution is for her to host a shower for Miranda. And Miranda very sensitively, I thought, asks whether Charlotte's really okay with doing that after all that she's been through. Charlotte says she is, and plans are put in motion. Fast forward, two things happen. Miranda is deep in negotiation with work, and Charlotte calls, interrupting with a registry emergency. And then Charlotte also paints over all evidence that she had been thinking about having a baby. Charlotte later swings by to help Miranda get her apartment ready and bombards her with questions and information in a way that completely overwhelms Miranda, to the point that she considers not showing up for her own baby shower. Miranda goes to see Carrie and reveals that she dropped her niece on her head when she's babysitting. She's basically terrified that she'll be a bad mother. Carrie talks her off the ledge, and Miranda does show up at the shower after all, which Charlotte has ultimately tailored to her exact requests. All is well. Miranda even consents to opening presents in front of everyone until the Tiffany's baby rattle makes a reappearance and Charlotte is gutted. Charlotte runs to her room. Miranda goes to comfort her and discovers that she might be maternal after all. Finally, we have Carrie. She has delivered her first article to Vogue, and Murphy Brown, aka Enid, Vogue editor, is not happy with it. It's too much Carrie and not enough Vogue. Julian, an older man who hooked Carrie up with the job because his daughter introduced him to her column, helps her drown her sours in martinis and gets her to agree to try again. She is trying, but ultimately she invites Julian to dinner in an attempt to tell him that she can't do it. At dinner, Julian, who is wearing a baby's breath boutonniere, super weird. Like, why?
My eyes like locked on it. And I was like, how have I never noticed this before?
It's like somebody was getting him dressed and they were like, he needs something. And there was literally like a bouquet sitting there and they broke off a piece of baby's breath and were like, stick this on. Totally. Anyway, at that dinner, Carrie reveals that her father left her and her mother without explanation when she was very young. And editor Julian decides that all of her issues with men are really rooted in her father abandonment issue. Carrie is not sure what to do with this newfound piece of psychoanalysis. Side note, do you think that this came up when she was in therapy with Bon Jovi's therapist? Because how could it not?
Oh, right. We just didn't hear about it. I mean, it must have come up.
She had multiple sessions with this therapist. I feel like that's like a basic question. Of like, tell me about your family situation.
Yeah.
So like, she acts like this is like brand new insight.
Well, it is for us.
It's brand new insight for us, but she acts like it's brand new insight for her.
Yeah.
She's like, what could it be that all of my issues with men are related to my relationship or lack thereof with my father? Like, it's like,
yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure I buy that it is, but I'm just saying like, she acts like it's totally novel.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Anyway, so she finally produces a rewrite of her article, and she and Julian decide to celebrate with a visit to the accessories room, where he pulls down his pants and suggests that a relationship with an older man could really help her work through her daddy issues. She, of course, declines. Even though he's wearing Versace underwear, so.
Oh, God. It's so weird. I mean, I hate this episode. I actually really like the baby shower part of this episode. Everything else in this episode, I could just toss out a window and be happy.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that I don't think that it advances the story all that much. And the Carrie situation actually just gets under my skin because I get that she's got a particular style of writing that's a very Carrie Bradshaw style that works in her column. But like, she's trying to make extra money by doing this work for Vogue. Can you just write what they're asking for?
I wrote down in my notes, has Carrie ever read an article in Vogue or does she just look at the pictures?
Right.
Because read any article in Vogue and you'll understand that, like, that's not how they write.
And they didn't give her like an offer to come be Carrie Bradshaw, our guest columnist.
Right.
They were like, write some Vogue content for us and we'll pay you. And those are two very different things. And back to the conversation we were having last episode of like, what does it take for Carrie to go out and get another source of income, another job? Right. Like, you might have to let go of like only showing up in the writing world in one way.
Right. I mean, it's very strange. And yeah, the whole thing is very strange at Vogue. I understand that they wanted to like bring Vogue into like the world of Sex and the City and they needed to like put her there in order to do that. But I mean, I didn't need any of this. Nothing that happens to Carrie, and they could have just said like, they said it at the end of last episode to that end, I'm looking at, you know, some freelance work. Vogue has offered me whatever.
Right. We didn't actually
word or whatever she said.
Yeah. No, we didn't actually need to see her experience at Vogue.
No, we didn't need to see it. I mean, she could have just been like, yeah, oh my God, I'm so excited about my first article or whatever. Like,
right.
It's silly. It's stupid. I hate the three-way thing. I guess that was very like edgy at the time.
For sure. Yeah.
Like a couple would have a three-way for someone's birthday. So I guess that's how it makes it in. I mean, to me, like literally the only worthwhile storyline here is Charlotte and Miranda, which I actually do love.
Yeah.
I have questions about a white chocolate peanut butter baby that you eat.
Yeah. I was like, what? Why?
Well, okay. First of all, white chocolate and peanut butter are two very sweet flavors that should never go together. If you're going to have peanut butter, you need dark chocolate. Like,
unless if you're having like more of a natural peanut butter that has less sugar in it. So it's like more salty than sugary.
Okay. I doubt that, but fine. I'll allow it. But I was just like, just thinking about a white chocolate peanut butter baby makes my mouth stick together.
Fair enough. But also like, why do you want to carve up a baby and eat it at a baby shower?
Okay. Point number two, like, why are you eating a baby? Is this like some sort of weird, like vegan ritual that like you have an edible baby and you sacrifice it? It's very strange. Very, very strange.
Yes. I mean, yes. So let's talk coaching questions. So I have two for Miranda. And the first is, what if it's okay that you're afraid of being a bad mom?
Oh, yeah. I like that for her because, you know, she's so, first of all, she's so convinced to start with, convinced with no evidence, given that she hasn't been an actual mother before.
Yes.
But also just like that it's the worst thing in the world and that she needs to like fill in the gaps of her anticipated performance by like getting Charlotte, you know, to help baby proof. But then, of course, that blows up. And I mean, the thought exercise of, like, so follow this down the rabbit hole of like, what happens if you're a terrible mother?
Yep.
I'd be interested to know what she came up with.
I would too. And sort of like the flip of the coin and the other question I have for her. So I actually have four questions. So these are really kind of one, but the flip of that is, how will you know if you're a good mom?
Right. Cause it doesn't seem like she's considered the possibility that there might be like aspects of motherhood that she's not great at and aspects of motherhood that she is great at. She's just kind of like, you are either a wonderful mother or a terrible mother, and I will be the
terrible version.
Yes. No questions asked. That's how it's going to be. I know for sure. Like, no evidence. It's done.
Well, and she latches onto these very specific. Okay, so like, she talks about dropping her niece. I dropped Haley on her head when she was a baby, and let me be clear, I didn't drop her. She was like 2 weeks old, maybe less. And I left her on the couch. They shouldn't be able to roll over at that point. And somehow she rolled off the couch.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. I mean, did I feel like a terrible mother? Absolutely. Was she totally fine? Absolutely. Could it have been much worse? Absolutely. Is that one incident going to define my entire status as a mother? No.
Right. Right. Totally. Also, it's not very far from the couch to the ground. No.
And they're very, it's the word I want to say, elastic at that point.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
They're like designed to survive. So not that you should be like leaving your infants unattended on a couch. I don't recommend it because they apparently can actually roll off.
She's fine. Everything's fine.
Yeah. I mean, I could tell you a couple stories of things that I did like early on because I just didn't know. And she teases me about them to this day. So it's all good.
Yeah. Right. But I mean, also I have questions about like dropping your niece. I don't know. I mean, like, who actually drops their kid from, like, a full standing
position? No, and I don't even think, I think it was more, like, exactly, I feel like she describes it in some detail, and she says something about it sliding off the couch, and so I think it's, like.
Okay, and then the near fall that happens at the shower
same is thing.
Sliding off the couch, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think, like, here's the thing, this set of questions applies to anything that we're worried about being bad at, right? Like, what if it's okay that we're worried about being bad at it? And how will we know if we're good at it? I think is a really useful line of inquiry to kind of figure out how to settle our nervous system down and what we want to focus on going forward.
For sure. And I'm also having the thought that she might want to ask herself how to make space for the possibility that she's a good mother.
That's a fair point, because she may struggle with even being able to answer that second part if she doesn't make that space.
Right. Because she's so invested in the idea that she doesn't know how to do this. She can't get it done. She needs somebody else to tell her how to do things. She's not going to be good at this. She's so invested in that like, where would she even have time and space and energy to acknowledge like, oh, I just can't on that.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, and I mean, look, I think like the what if it's okay that you're being a bad mom question also is a little bit designed to get at the notion of like, of course you're afraid. You've never done this thing before. It's a really big deal. Of course you're feeling a little unsettled. Of course you're feeling a little uncertain. Of course you're fixating on details around like baby proofing and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. When the reality is that like that child could arrive in your house and you don't need to do anything for several months. Like they are self-contained. Just have a place to put them, a bassinet, a crib, whatever, and you'll be fine. I mean, people did it in cardboard boxes. So
yeah, you know, it keeps them warm.
Yep. So, all right. So my next question is for Charlotte, and it's again, a little bit of a question about feelings, and it's how can you allow happiness and grief to coexist?
Yeah. I wrote in my notes, my notes look very different when I'm doing the coaching questions and when you're doing the coaching questions. So I'm very like brief in my notes when it's not me.
Well, it's my turn.
It's in the spotlight. Yep. Yeah. And so here's what my notes said. Miranda's overwhelmed by baby prep and Charlotte says she should have a shower to get all the shit she needs. And it's a real brave thing, honestly.
Yeah, it is.
It is a real act of bravery to look at your friend and like recall a few episodes ago when Miranda, you know, didn't want to have the baby and Charlotte was so upset and say like, look, I'm going to be on board with this, even though it touches that nerve.
Yes.
And, you know, doing this for someone else instead of having it done for myself, you know, that's tough. That's really tough.
But I think there's this notion that we see a little bit of in Charlotte and that I know that I've felt of like you have to choose between one or the other, that by being happy here, you're ignoring your grief, or by acknowledging the fact that you're grieving, you have to ignore the happiness. And I actually think there's room for it all, right?
Yeah. Well, for sure. I do think that it's when she actually leaves the room after seeing the, like, she doesn't hold back the tears when she sees the rattle. She sees the rattle and she just like loses it right then and there and like removes herself from the situation. And I do think that that's a step in the right direction, because she does allow herself to have the emotions and doesn't say like, you know, you're the hostess, this is Miranda's party, like you shouldn't, you know, leave the room with all the guests.
Yes.
She actually lets herself have that moment. And I think that's great. But yeah, I mean, you can do both and you should.
I guess what I'm saying is you don't have to paint it over. Like you don't have to pretend it didn't happen. You don't have to pretend it wasn't real or it wasn't a real desire or that you're not, that you didn't lose something that was really important to you.
Yeah. I mean, I'd be curious, I mean, to know what the thought process was behind the painting over of the nursery. Like, who was that for?
I mean, they position it as though it was for the fact that she was going to have all these people at her house and she didn't want it to be obvious to them.
Yeah, but...
But also, I think, like, long-term, if she's going to be living in this apartment and or if she's going to sell it, maybe it makes sense to just let that part go.
But, I mean, I just didn't...
I hear you.
Is she really, like, painting a whole room because she's having, like, 13 lawyers she doesn't know?
I agree.
You know? It's just, I mean, that was a real nod to the grief.
Yes.
That she didn't necessarily acknowledge.
Yes.
Because, you know, as you pointed out, she makes it about the guests and she doesn't want them to.
Yes.
But I think it's really, she no longer wants to walk through that.
Be faced with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And fair enough. Right. I mean, Totally. The painting over in and of itself is not a wrong thing. I think you've hit on the my hesitation with her, like the friction I feel with it is like, don't paint over it in a way that you're not acknowledging some very real stuff that's going on for you.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. So this might be a weird question, but I'm just going to ask it anyway. And this is for Carrie, because she gets kind of hung up on this notion of like, oh, what if the reason I have all these issues with men is that my father disappeared when I was 5. Mm-hmm. And my question is this, what makes you think you have issues with men?
Oh, I mean, so, okay, let's break down what she tells Julian. He asks her, she says she had just went through a breakup. He asked her if it was a great love. She says it was a great love. And then she says, I went here and he went here, and she's got her arms crossed.
Yes.
Like they're going in opposite directions. And yeah, I mean, she hasn't. And then we jump to, well, maybe your issues with men are about your daddy, basically.
Yes.
Yeah, but yeah, she hasn't said anything.
Well, and I just was thinking back and I was like, wow, how quick are we to assume that because we aren't in a marriage relationship that we have actual issues with men? Do we have issues with men or we just haven't found the right person?
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Like, I mean,
And I mean, like, so we know that Julian is leveraging this theory for his own advantage. Yes,
absolutely.
But she jumps on it like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
As you pointed out, she's kind of like, what? I have issues with men? Oh, okay. And kind of accepts it lock, stock, and barrel.
Yes.
Without much reflection. And yeah, she's said nothing in that conversation that implies that she has, quote, issues with men.
No, I mean, like, I want to give her, and you said it, I think, last episode, but I want to give her credit for the evolution that she's gone through.
Totally.
Like, she's showing up in relationships, I think, as her whole self. Is she getting it perfect every time? No. Is she human? So, yes, that makes sense. But it's like this notion, I mean, she didn't have issues, like, there was no issues with men. She didn't want to marry Aiden. I'm broken and can't have relationships. It's just, I didn't want to marry this guy. Cool. And you know what? You didn't. Versus somebody like issues might be stuffing down your own feelings and going ahead and continuing with that relationship.
Yeah. Right. Issues with men might be, I can't bear to be alone. So I'm with any guy that'll have me because I need to fill some void in my own self-worth.
Right. Regardless of how they treat me, regardless of whether I like them, regardless of how I feel. I actually, as much as we are hard on Carrie, I actually don't think she has issues with men.
Yeah. No. No, her initial issues were really much more with herself and her self-confidence and self-worth and all that stuff. Yeah. I mean, that's a really, really good question. That I think if you asked her, she'd be like, sorry, what?
Yeah.
And it would take a minute to get a real conversation going, but it's the right question.
Well, and I mean, that's why I said it's kind of a weird question, because even as I wrote it down, I was like, wow, like this whole series is based on this idea that these girls are working out their men issues, but they're really not.
Yeah. Right.
They're working out their self issues. And isn't that just the story of our lives? So
yeah.
Anyway, so here are this week's questions. So the first one is a pair and it's for Miranda. What if it's okay that you're afraid of being a bad mom, and how will you know that you're a good mom? The second is for Charlotte and it's, how can you allow happiness and grief to coexist? And the last is for Carrie and it is, what makes you think that you've got issues with men?
Love it.
So awesome. Thanks everyone for being here. And we'll see you again next week for a new episode and the last episode of this season. Season finale. Hey, that's Becky. To connect with me, the easiest way is to head over to my website at untanglehappiness.com. There you can learn more about the services I offer, as well as get additional information about my book, The Happiness Recipe, A Powerful Guide to Living What Matters. I look forward to connecting with you.
Hey, it's Carrie. I would love to connect with you out in the world at carriewalshcoaching.com. There you'll find more information about me, coaching, blog posts, and an opportunity to sign up for my newsletter. Or if you or your company is looking for executive coaching, you can check out theatalantagroup.com for more information. That's theatalantagroup.com.